Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
Expectation. That's the nothing personal word of the day. It is Wednesday, 4-2-4-2-4. Expectation. We're talking about the Los Angeles Dodgers today because it struck me that everyone, meaning fans of baseball, writers in baseball, have all of a sudden started to reflect on the season. And we're not even at the end of April, but teams have played 24, 25 games. And there are certain teams that were expected to stink and do, certain teams that were expected to stink who don't, certain teams who were expected to be in the middle who are doing well or doing badly. But every article about the Dodgers has been focusing on how great Shohei Ohtani has been. And he has been superb. The top of the Dodgers lineup, the 27 Yankees Dodgers lineup, the greatest top three in the history of lineups where they decided to go Betts, Ohtani, and Freeman with Will Smith in the cleanup. They'll give you stats that Mookie's batting 347 and Shohei's batting 364. They'll give you the OPS over 1,000 for both of them. They'll talk about historic numbers. Ohtani's got all these extra base hits and how great it is that with all the distractions, he's playing so well. And I'm not trying to yuck on anyone's Ohtani yum, but I am trying to say that in baseball, we've learned over and over again, yet people forget over and over again, that one player, two players, or a big three does not a champion make. And the Dodgers are currently a great example of that. They have the 11th best record in Major League Baseball. They're a team that is 7-9 in their past 16 games. They started 7-2, but they are now 2-under over 16 games, which coincidentally is 10% of a season. So I ask you, what's the cause of that? It's a pretty simple cause. The same thing that if you were paying attention, you knew going into the season, the Dodgers pitching is mediocre. Now we can get excited by watching Tyler Glasnow. Now that's exciting. He's got great games when he goes 7+. He's got an absolute life on his fastball. He's got wipeout spin. Everything's fantastic. And then you realize you've got four other days. Except one of those days was going to be surefire rookie of the year, Yamamoto. Maybe still surefire rookie of the year, but not without struggles. And then you look at a little deeper at their pitching and you realize they have 8 quality starts in their 25 games. 6 innings or more, 3 runs or fewer. Who's got quality starts anymore? Nobody. Well, that's not exactly true. When you go look at the standings for teams that have quality starts, you'd expect to see the Nationals at the bottom with 4 quality starts. And you'd expect to see teams at the top with 14 or 15 quality starts. 8 is right in the middle. Coincidentally, right where their record is. So what do you do when you are running a team where you expect going into the season, your over-under was 103.5 games? That is a pipe dream right now. As a matter of fact, you can bet if you still are pro Dodgers, you can bet right now that the Dodgers will win 100 games. And what is it, Coca? It's minus 110 to win 100, that they win 100 or more games. It's a very, very small premium that is required. In the beginning of the season, when 103.5 is the market, to win 100, you're giving back 3.5 games, you were going to get paid. You were going to, for age 69, you were going to have to pay, is of course what I meant. So what point during a season do you start evaluating your team? I don't know if we covered this in a mailbag recently, or was it a regular episode? When we talk about our own evaluation of our team and how we do it during the offseason, then we do it in spring training, and then we do it during the course of the season. And the best front offices are the ones who can truly evaluate what their team is, not what they thought it would be. And we talked about how it's the glass half full. And right now, if you're Andrew Friedman, I think what he's doing, he's looking at his team and he's saying, listen, we're in first place in a competitive division. Our pitching's been only okay. Our offense has been exactly what we expected it to be. I would expect that we will have the season that we thought we would have. It's April 24th. We're good. But if you're really drilling down as an executive, and if you're the best executive in baseball or one of the highest paid executives in baseball, around May 15th, and this is why we fired a bunch of managers, not saying I was the best executive in baseball by any stretch, but this is when we started to think about, are we going to replace a manager? Did we get it wrong? Did we get it right? Are we good? Are we not good? We're about 2.5 weeks away, 3 weeks away. Where the Dodgers, if they are in this position 3 weeks from now, a little bit over 500, fantastic offense, not padding their lead in the very competitive NL West, do you start thinking about either adding to your team, or do you say, this was our plan, where we'll get Ferris Bueller back? Kershaw is going to be ready to go sometime after the All-Star break. We always knew we just wanted to hang on in the beginning, and then we'll take off. The best executives don't do that, because teams that you think are just going to take off, they don't flip the switch. They rarely do take off, and you can't count on it. What happens more often is that a team, much like a child who's 3 years old, and you say, oh, he'll grow out of it. Oh, she won't be that way when she's older. And then your kids get older and you realize, wow, they were just like that when they were three. I don't know if any of you have kids, but if you do, think about what I'm saying and tell me if your experience is the same, where your kids' personalities come out when they're young, and that's sort of what they are. It's pretty much the same with baseball. Every once in a while, something happens to your child, an event, a moment, and maybe their path changes, but generally not. It's the same with teams. Generally, what you are over the first month and a half, which gets you to May 15th, that's who you're going to be for the past and the next 4.5 months. Jason Stark, calling you out, Jason, you've got a great stat. And I wish I had it exact, but you'll get the gist. If you look at the standings on Memorial Day, where when you're working for a team or you're a fan of a team, you say, oh, it's early, it's only Memorial Day. We are right in this. Everything's going to be great. The general rule is, I want to say it's at 70%, 75%. I'll text you later and ask, oh, that's a look at me, Louie. I will send an email or a tweet and find out what the actual number is. But the standings around Memorial Day are generally the standings. But there's always the team. And you think you're going to be that one where you're just going to turn it on and you're going to take off and you're going to win. I don't think the Dodgers have the ability to do that. And if you know that you don't have the ability to do it, then when you look at yourself May 15th, that's when you start deciding that you are going to add. So I have a few thoughts for the Dodgers. One, if they continue where they are, Dave Roberts is going to be fine. But if they somehow fall off, get caught maybe by the Diamondbacks, get caught by the Padres, stay around 500 as we get into the summer months, there will be a ton of heat on Dave Roberts. And I don't think they will make a managerial change. As a matter of fact, they will not. However, if the Dodgers have the ability to add, and that was always part of their budget, I would expect the Dodgers to add earlier rather than later. And the reason I would suggest that they add earlier than they may have projected they needed to is that you want to get the team in the mindset, the crushing mindset, that they are going to be the steamroller that they thought they were going to be. I didn't think so, but that many people thought they were going to be. And I assume their front office thought that. And if you're going to be that steamroller, you better start rolling soon. Really soon, if you want to have fun. Wait to see. Let's do a Dodgers wait to see. We have one right now. We have the under 103.5 before the season started. I like it. I'm going to make it even stronger. I'm going to tell you, wait to see. the Dodgers will not win 100 games. They simply do not have the staff to win 100 games. And by the time they add, it'll be like Jim Lovell losing the moon. They will lose the ability to win 100 games. So wait to see. We're going under 100 for the Dodgers. I don't need to do a wait to see about the White Sox, I don't think, Coca. The White Sox are back in the news. They're back in my mind because they're always on my mind, Willie Nelson. And the reason they are is they're going for this new stadium. So many. This is a strange time. Unless it's always this time, and I just didn't think of it in these terms. So many teams and so many sports are going for new ballparks and new stadiums, new arenas right now. The White Sox, I think the Bears are about to announce that they're, forget Arlington, I guess they'll use that land for a parking lot with the Joni Mitchell and the Counting Crows, or maybe they'll sell it, or maybe they'll develop it, but it won't have anything to do with a stadium because they're looking to build on the waterfront. A lot of movie references today. I'm feeling movie references today. I don't know why. I guess it's a regular Wednesday. And the White Sox, you remember, were doing that huge development on the South Loop. Well, news came out, and there was an article in Crain Chicago Business. And it's all about the financing for this project. Jerry Reinsdorf, who pays attention to everything, trust me, must have realized, and correctly so, that pushing through a stadium deal is not simple. He may remember from when he tried to get the current ballpark built and the fact that he had a threat to move to Tampa and came right to the edge of moving the White Sox. There have been rumblings of Nashville when Reinsdorf met with the mayor, but that was never about relocation. It was just a little bit about leverage. But now, when Reinsdorf is realizing that it's going to be way harder in today's climate than he expected, given Field of Schemes and all the different initiatives that don't pass and the difficulty in getting public money, he is now, quote, upping his ante. What that means is that he is not going to ask for the entire $1.25 billion that's needed for a ballpark, even though that's how it started. You know those Twitter things, Coco, where how it started, how's it going? I'm picturing one with Reinsdorf and the White Sox, given the fact that I think they're 0-60 right now. I don't think they've won a game. And I think they're 42 games back in their division. I think they're a lock to lose 110 games this year. Book it right now. As a matter of fact, I don't know if there's a market for that, but if there is, I'd be interested in taking a look at that for a pick of the day. But how were we doing? Like what it was like when the season started. I mean, I think that he probably knew his team wasn't good, but didn't think it was this bad. And he was sitting up and he was in a suite and getting all excited about a new ballpark. And now how's it going? Sort of sucking his thumb in the fetal position in one corner off camera in an owner's suite, because it's impossible for things to go worse for the White Sox. Though it should be noted, team performance is not directly correlated to public financing of a new ballpark. It never has been. As a team, we'd like to build a winning team so it crescendos in your first year in a new ballpark. That would be amazing. Hard to do, but it would be amazing. But for the White Sox, what I'm expecting from them is that they had to do a little pirouette. And so Jerry decided now's a good time to do it. And the pirouette was that now he wanted it to get out there that Reinsdorf had mentioned, quote, a figure of $200 million or more in terms of his contribution. So I was thinking about that number. A $1.2 billion project, if the team puts in $200 million, that's not even 20%. 20% would be $240 million. So that would be, call it an 83-17 partnership. I'm trying to remember the last 83-17 partnership. You think the Marlins and what I negotiated was that good? We weren't close to 83-17 with what we had to put into the ballpark deal. It's unheard of. The Nationals went 100-0 public, but that was then. That was part of getting a team from Montreal into Washington. Very, very difficult to get numbers like that. So why would the White Sox waste a PR moment by talking about their willingness to invest their own funds into the project? When Reinsdorf has said, quote, he's willing to open his wallet, yet then a number gets floated of around $200 million. That's not going to make anyone in the public happy. That's not going to swage any of the taxpayers or any of the public officials. They don't get cover from that number. And when you're putting a stadium deal together, it's all about cover. You're all about providing cover to the local politicians for participating in this venture in order to get your ballpark built. And the need to give cover is way more pronounced today than it ever has been because of ancillary development. It used to be that the cover was only, hey, they're keeping naming rights. Hey, they're keeping concession money. That's child's play. Now, what teams want is the revenue from the other development, from hotels, from the convention center, from the retail, from the housing. They want to run that development, collect money for that development, have that be off the books, not the finance books of the company, but off the revenue sharing books of Major League Baseball. They want to be off the books, and they want to use that as part of their global P&L as they examine how high their payroll can be. So I want to take a minute about that because I've discussed this concept before, and I've discussed it in terms of franchises, where if you own 10 Chick-fil-A's and one of them loses a ton of money, you're not going to take money from the one that makes a ton of money to support the one that loses a ton of money. You would sooner close the one that loses money and then have 9 Chick-fil-A's. The purpose of a profitable franchise is to profit. It's to get money distributed to you. It's to increase the value of your enterprise, not to fund a crappy Chick-fil-A. There are examples where companies do that, and we told you that was called a loss leader. So that's when you start something that you know is not going to be profitable, but it's part of your expense because you're building your brand, or you want to be in a neighborhood, you want to say thank you to somebody or something that helped you throughout your career. That's called a loss leader. In baseball, when I tell you, and we discuss this, here's what it is, Coca, with Fenway Sports Group. Fenway Sports Group isn't taking money from the Penguins and moving them to the Red Sox, or money from the Red Sox and moving them to Liverpool. Totally separate entities that need to stand on their own two feet. A baseball team that is just a baseball team. Now, Reinsdorf owns the Bulls and the White Sox. He also owns the new stadium network that he's trying to create in RSN. You can play around with numbers, play around with rights deals, where the White Sox could have a lower rights deal, but still pass the smell test within baseball, because you're not allowed to have a rights deal of zero, because rights deals are part of revenue sharing. But you could have a below market rights deal that would pass the MLB smell test, that would buttress your RSN network, which is a business you're trying to build and you want it to show profitability. You could also go the other way. And if you own a network, you can pay a huge rights deal to the team, which you wouldn't, but you could, so that your team can have extra cash operating income that can be used for players or for whatever you want. What I think Reinsdorf business play is that he wants the White Sox to be able to support a higher payroll by itself. He wants to take the development money and he wants to feed a bit of it to the White Sox as a little sort of training wheels to get it going. But it's really a larger family real estate play than just moving the White Sox payroll up. So him getting this stadium deal, in his mind, and I'm not pretending to read Jerry Reinsdorf's mind, but as a business person, I can expect he's a rational actor in the world of business. He realizes that instead of funding a White Sox payroll with capital from other businesses or with capital from his net worth or with capital that he borrows, he may be willing to fund the White Sox with capital generated from, quote, White Sox-related business. And the ancillary development for these ballparks, that's now called ancillary revenue. Look at what Ted Leonsis is trying to do in Washington with the deal he cut in D.C. He wants to do a whole big development that will help the Caps, the Capitals, and the Wizards. I was about to say, when I said Caps, my head, Coca, you can edit that out, but I stumbled because they used to be the Bullets. And when I said Caps, I was thinking Bullets, and they have not been. People may not remember this. They used to be called the Wizards with the Washington Bullets back with the Big E and Wes Unseld. Those were teams. So the way this White Sox situation ends, and every time they lose a game, I think they lost last night. They were up 5-2 in the eighth. Their bullpen blew it to the Twins. They're actually 3-20, Coke is telling me, not 0-60. All right, I got that wrong. The Chicago White Sox at 3-20 have been shut out a record 8 times in their first 23 games. And it will have zero to do with whether or not $200 million is enough to get a new ballpark done for the Chicago White Sox. We're going to have a lot more out of Chicago, I'm sure. Bears, White Sox. It's all about TV money. Let me do that transition. Let me do it totally better. The White Sox, not 0-60, 3-20 to start the season, shut out 8 times in 23 games. We're going to hear a lot more about the White Sox as they continue their drive to get a new ballpark. TV rights are an important part of every baseball team's P&L. One of the great disruptions that's happening is with the RSN bankruptcy, trying to figure out what your TV revenue is going to be. You've got baseball doing the games. MLB took over production for Diamondbacks and Rockies and Padres. As you can see, not correlated to excitement or performance on the field. It's all about the number of subscribers in a particular demographic. It's all about carriage rights. It's all about people paying for something they don't want and holding on to that really antiquated notion of how people are going to act. We've spent quite a bit of time talking about the NBA and their upcoming rights deal. Well, we have an update. The Wall Street Journal reported that there is a formal right to match in the NBA media rights deals that it currently has with ESPN and Warner Discovery, TNT. For purposes of this segment, it will be ESPN and TNT. Because I could say Disney, but I'm saying ESPN, TNT. A right to match. One piece of advice to the Nothing Personal audience. When you are negotiating a contract, when you are selling something, the right to match has nothing but a quashing impact on the value of the product you are trying to sell. What a right to match means is that the NBA can do a deal with Apple. Just for streaming games on a Tuesday night, they can get right down to it, ready to sign. And when you have granted a right to match to your previously contracted partner, which the NBA did to ESPN and TNT, what that means is before you execute a deal with a third party, you have to go back to the first party and say, okay, this is the deal we have with Apple. You can match it. There are so many lawsuits and arbitrations that happen from these provisions. Because if you're a smart company, you negotiate a deal with Apple that ESPN and TNT cannot match. And I don't mean because the value is too much, because Apple provides something to you that they cannot match. So for example, Apple could give the NBA a Messi-like deal where the NBA gets a percentage of new subscription revenue to Apple TV because Apple TV is going to have an NBA package. And then the NBA could go to court and say, hey, ESPN had the right to match, but they couldn't match because they don't have the ability. There's no subscription revenue that they could do or that they could offer. Now, of course, ESPN could offer a percentage of ESPN Plus, but it would not be a true match. Turner, whatever their streaming network is, which escapes me right now because they do have one. Can you imagine the mental block I'm having at 2:24 in Paris right now doing a show with you? Max, thank you. But it's Bupkis. Apple has a far greater pot with which to deal from. So one way that these go to court is when the team or the league or the party that granted the right to match believes that they have given the company the right to match and that company hasn't done it. But the company responds with, you did not give us a deal that was matchable, same cause of action, because we would match any deal that we're able to match. Because if you're just talking about money, where the rights fees are $1 billion versus $1.5 billion in a straight rights deal, that's very easy. So when you're negotiating, you make it as complicated as possible if you're the NBA to make it as difficult as possible if you're looking to do a deal with someone other than ESPN and TNT. And all indicators say that the NBA just wants to do a deal the way they've done with ESPN and TNT, which I think is a mistake. But the other reason that a right to match is not a good thing to ever give is that when you are signing a contract and you know that you have the ability to have something like ESPN has the rights to NBA games, the right to match is something that they're willing to pay for. So you have to pay more money in order to get this right to match because it's so powerful. But the money that you pay extra is always under the total value of that which is being sold. So if the NBA did not have a right to match, in theory, they could go out to Apple, they could go to Peacock, they could go to Sky Sport, they could go anywhere and cut a deal, and they would get a competitive offer from those companies to air NBA games. But what incentive does Apple have, and we keep using Apple, to sit down and negotiate the best possible deal for themselves or the best possible deal for the NBA when they know they're going to waste all this lawyer money, they're going to waste all these hours and meetings, and then the NBA just picks up the deal and brings it to ESPN and says, match it. ESPN says, fine, thanks for doing the work. We'll just sign our name to that. Do you remember the days, are those days over, Coca, of the matching offers with NBA free agents? I haven't read about that recently. I would assume those days are over, where if you offered a guy a $20 million 3-year deal, but the team that offers the free agent $20 million over 3 years, the original team has the right to match it. And it's very simple in that regard. You take your player contract, it has the term and the total compensation, and what's blank is the team. So if the Brooklyn Nets sign a free agent for $20 million over three, but the New York Knicks have a right to offer, the New York Knicks sign him for 20 over three. The reason why that's bad for free agents is that getting the Nets to offer 20 over three, it's a waste for them because they know that it's just going to get matched. If there's no right to match, then you can go out and say, listen, I want 40 over three. I want 45 over three. Baseball, there was never, restricted free agency is in the NBA, Coca. That is correct. It used to be called the right to, it was matching. Somebody will tell me in the chat whether or not that's still happening, though I'm not looking at the chat. But when you're going out with players, players in baseball with their agents have the right to tell you that they've got 5 offers from 5 teams and that the offers they have are $100 million, $120 million. And what they'll say to you, and I've had agents say this to me, hey, David, we'll always give you the right to match, but it's not contractually obligated. And you don't know if they're telling the truth. In a real right to match, you present a formal offer to the team that had that right to match. So it's going to be fascinating to see what will happen here going forward. But my guess is that the NBA is going to re-up with ESPN and TNT. And I also believe that all the talk of me telling you about the WNBA, every day it's a new article. More teams have sold out season tickets. Teams are moving their Indiana Fever games to bigger venues. It used to be just one. Now, several of the Indiana Fever road games are being played in larger venues than where the actual home team would normally play. Caitlin Clark signs a $28 million 8-year Nike deal. Greatest, I think it's the highest deal for a WNBA player. everything indicates the moment that we've described for the WNBA and for women's sports. I'm in, but I told you, please take a look at the TV deal. Because when you've got the commissioner who's telling you, and I'm talking about Kathy, not Adam, the commissioner of the WNBA saying, I think that our rights fees will at least double. I love where we are as we negotiate a deal because their deal's running out because they're a part of the NBA deal. I don't think that's going to change. I think the networks now are going to do a deal with the NBA. There will be more money allocated in that deal to the WNBA. So it will keep the dream going that the WNBA is flourishing, see if franchise values continue to go up, see if revenues continue to go up. But I don't think there's anyone in the industry who thinks that the WNBA is ready to do a standalone broadcast deal at a number that would match what the NBA would allocate to them as part of their large overall deal. And if I'm Adam Silver, I am paying close attention because when I'm negotiating with ESPN and TNT, I am always keeping in mind a pegged number for the WNBA. That would be one of those early negotiating points. Hey, listen, they were at $60 million in the last deal. We're going to move them to $100 million. So just know, whatever we come up with, $100 million per year is being allocated to the NBA. Now let's negotiate what we're doing in the NBA and what package you are going to get the rights to. That's my guess how it's going. And obviously, it's an easy thing to wait to see because there'll be an announcement when these deals get re-upped. When we come back, we're going to review a movie, and I have a story about this movie. And then we're going to give you tell you something that happened with the FTC, which are three letters that my guess is you don't think about a lot. And what they did yesterday will impact every business, not just the sports business. We'll be right back.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Everyone is talking about magnesium. It's all you hear about. But why? What do we know about magnesium? Well, magnesium is the number one mineral that 75% of Americans are deficient in. If you are a woman over 35, magnesium will help you rediscover balance, energy, and vitality. Magnesium supports more than 300 enzymatic reactions in your body, including those involved in hormonal balance. From functional medicine doctors to mental well-being and female hormone experts, we all know that magnesium is the one mineral to improve all aspects of well-being and health. But which one? Magnesium Breakthrough from Bioptimizers, the trusted choice recommended by leading experts with 7 best-absorbed forms of magnesium to ensure your body receives the support it needs for overall well-being. Go to bioptimizers.com/balance today and use code BALANCE10 for 10% off. Support your journey to wellness at bioptimizers.com/balance. Magnesium Breakthrough from Bioptimizers, your foundation to optimal health and vitality.
Welcome back to Nothing Personal. It's David Sampson live from Paris, coming to you every day, 8 a.m. Eastern. We are live tomorrow as well. Friday, we'll have a mailbag, and then we're back on U.S. soil on Monday. Looking forward to our last live show Monday night, Nothing Personal Live with David Sampson at City Winery, New York City. Please go to davidsampsonpodcast.com. There are still tickets available. It is selling out, though, so it looks like. I got some notification from City Winery, Coca, that tickets are low and meet and greets are high. So we're going to be very busy. Sarah, Matthew, and I will be there with all of you on Monday night. Thank you for continuing to spread the word about Nothing Personal. You may think it doesn't matter, but it really does. As exhibited with the numbers, the popularity, we're on the DraftKings Network every day, 10 a.m. innings eater. Love you, Bimmo. Watch a movie every day. So I have my story of my movie yesterday. You'd think that when I'm traveling, I wouldn't watch a movie, but of course I do every single day. There are rules that I'm not familiar with and that bother me because I don't have, is it Sling? Whatever I have is not what I want because when I open the iPad and I'm ready to watch content for my movie of the day, middle of the night or whatever time of day it is, because when you're in Europe, your body gets as screwed up as possible. My body is to begin with. Some of the streaming services, they don't work. Some of them have different things available. And God knows you're on the hotel Wi-Fi. They know exactly where you are. I'm not sure that Amazon knew the segment we did in yesterday's Nothing Personal about Robert Kraft. I'm not sure at all. I am sure that Amazon knew that I was in France. So I turn on Amazon Prime. I'm looking to watch a movie today. The first movie suggested for you, a movie called Kiss Me Kosher. Do they know I'm Jewish? Do they know that I just talked about the war in Gaza and what's going on college campuses? How did they give me that movie that I had never heard of before? It's a 96-minute movie or 100-minute movie about a woman, who Jewish woman, Israeli woman, who falls in love with a German woman. And it's about her grandmother, who may or may not fall in love with a Palestinian man. And her grandmother, among other people in the family, are not too thrilled that the daughter, we're past them not being thrilled when someone's gay or lesbian. Thank God we're past that. But we're still very much in the era where, hey, you've got to marry of your kind. You must marry a Jewish person. You cannot be with a German because all Germans are Nazis. And you can't be with a Palestinian because Israelis and Palestinians can't be together. So this family is going through a grandmother and a granddaughter as they figure out where they stand, what barriers they're willing to climb over, and whether or not it could really break up a family. It's got a bit of a happy ending. However, the reason why I suggest that you see Kiss Me Kosher, and it's a movie you've not heard of, is that I love tolerance and I love Live and Let Live. I guess if anyone asks you about me, like, what does he stand for? What's the number one thing that David Samson stands for? Many of you would say capitalism, and you'd be wrong, though that is on the podium. But in the pole position, the gold medal position, is Live and Let Live. There are two parts to that. There is a no comma. You have to both. It's not or, it's and. And means both sides have to happen. Or is just one of the two sides. A quick and or discussion. Live and let live. Because if you don't let live, then you can't live. Kiss Me Kosher. Nothing Personal pick of the day. We swept yesterday. Two wins. Are you loving, folks? Are you loving the Patrick Corbin bet that we have throughout the season? The Dodgers beat Patrick Corbin. Now, of course, you're going to tell me Corbin had a great start. Don't care. The Nationals lost. When Corbin pitches, we're going to keep going against the Nationals every single day. And then we'll do a review. Coca, can you keep track of this? Or Sarah, can somebody keep track of this? It's so amazing to have the ability to do an and or an or in that situation. Hey, Coco or Sarah, could you keep track of Patrick Corbin starts that we've done as our pick of the day? I think we've done everyone so far. And then keep track of what our record is with Patrick Corbin starts. I don't want to say anything because my ear is silent right now. I think we're undefeated this year and we will keep going. We also had the Mavs over the Clippers. Something happened there. What happened with that line? When we did the show, it was Mavs 2.5 over the Clippers. And I saw on the web worldwide today that the game ended at Clippers -0.5. Kawhi Leonard played. That's what it was. Well, guess what? Mavs won by 3, which means if you took the Mavs when we told you to take the Mavs, they still covered. The Mavs tied that series. It's interesting. The Clips won without Kawhi and lost with Kawhi. It's basketball. It's playoffs. What do we got today? Two picks for you today. We're back in the NBA. We've got the Celtics as huge favorites over the Heat. I would not touch that game because the Celtics could win by 30. They could win by 10. They could win by 5. Or the Heat could somehow rebound the win. Unlikely, but Spoelstra's done it before. The Heat have done it before. No Jimmy, no problem. We're going to leave that game be. We're going to focus on the Thunder and what happened to them with the Pelicans, where they did not. They won the game, but it was a hotly contested game. Today, they're giving a touchdown and a half, and we're going to take the Thunder. I think they will take a comfortable 2-0 lead by winning game two by more than 7.5. OKC, 7.5 over the Pelicans. In baseball, this is like my Oakland A's moment with them and the Vegas deal and how totally screwed up that is. I am having an Astros moment. Now, I do have the Mariners going to the World Series and winning, but I did not have the Astros in last place this far into the season. Is Joey Espada at risk? No, he's not. But man, the Dodgers pitching injury, the Dodgers, 4-8-6-9. The Astros pitching injuries have been crushing. The Altuve is having a fantastic offensive season. Bregman's a pending free agent. I'm not sure whether he's hit his first home run yet, but at the end of the day, the Astros are in last place. And it's still early, but as we get into May, that's when the early part of the season gets late and you start getting into mid-season, and you don't want to be in that mid-season position. The Astros are playing the Cubs. They've got Jameson Taillon pitching. I've got to think the Astros, it's time. It's time. Astros are only giving 105. It's hard to ever get the Astros giving 105. The Cubs are playing well, no doubt, but we're taking the Astros. It's basically a pick 'em game. OKC 7.5 over the Pels. Astros 105 over the Cubs. When you sign a contract with a company, how many of you have had to sign a non-compete clause? How many of you have been in a company where your contract says, if you leave this company, you may not work in this industry for 120 days? Well, if you're in baseball, or you're in fashion, or you're on Wall Street, or you're in one of a gazillion different companies, you are subject to a non-compete clause. Non-compete clauses are very anti-labor and very pro-management. Yesterday, in what I consider to be one of the biggest business stories of the year, the Federal Trade Commission banned non-compete clauses. I want to make sure that marinated with all of you. The FTC has the right in a 3-2 vote, but it doesn't matter. They have the right to say that in Major League Baseball, that when you sign an assistant general manager to your club and give them a long-term deal, you are not allowed to ask for nor agree to a non-compete clause, which means that that assistant GM who you think you've signed to a 3-year deal can quit and take a job with someone else. Permission? Who needs it? You can do whatever you want whenever you want to. I'm at Morgan Stanley. See you later. Heading to Goldman. I'm at Gucci. See you later. I'm going to Louis. What the FTC is saying by banning non-compete clauses is that there's been a quashing impact on individuals starting their own business or individuals having the ability to move to other companies within the same industry. And they view that as having a negative impact on salary, a negative impact on innovation, a negative impact on healthcare costs. Because all these people leave companies and have to sit on the sidelines for 120 days and stay on COBRA, as opposed to getting a job at a competitor and then getting on their insurance plan. So they somehow calculate the FTC. It'll be $180 billion in healthcare savings. The FTC's view is that non-compete clauses keep wages low, suppress new ideas, and rob the American economy of dynamism, including from the more than 8,500 new startups, and I'm quoting the FTC chair, that would be created a year once non-competes are banned. Do you know how much we used to talk about this within baseball and how hard baseball fought to have this ban not happen? And it's not because they're the big bad league. It's because it's really hard when you are building a front office that you have no way to keep that front office intact. When you give money, when you give security, you want loyalty. Non-compete clauses are meant as belt and suspenders to the loyalty that you give with a long-term deal. I raised my hand in a committee meeting when I was in Major League Baseball, and I said, if non-compete clauses ever get banned, I would suggest that we eliminate all long-term contracts. Have everybody with a one-year deal. Owners stood up and said, no, we don't like that because we like the idea of the rebuild. We like the idea of having a GM who is not solely focused on 1 year or an AGM or a cross-checker. We like the idea of a long-term vision because, in theory, you make better decisions when you're not worried for your job or worried about what your next job will be. To which I stood up and I said, but hold on. It is in the best interest of an employee at all times to act in the employee's best interest. The existence of a non-compete clause does not all of a sudden make an employee raise his hand in solidarity with the team for which he works. There are executives, there are scouts, there are coaches who go out and get offers from other teams when they're on long-term deals for the purpose of renegotiating. Or when they're on one-year deals, they go out and get offers and then take it back. The whole right to match thing, that's not an official right to match in these baseball contracts, but yet you bring it to your GM and say, hey, listen, the Astros want me, keep me. I'll take 10 grand less if you keep me. How many people said that to me? The minute you tell your employer that you'll take 10 grand less than your offer because you love it so much here, your employer knows that you're full of crap. Oh, I only want to wear Astros polos. I don't want to be a scout for the Diamondbacks. It's preposterous because employees act within their own self-interest, as they should. I do. I'm not criticizing that in the least. The ramification of this FTC ban, you're not going to feel it today, but you are going to feel it when senior executives no longer have non-competes, where you could have a senior executive. If you are, here's a great example. I'm going to be very careful who I let into meetings if I'm working at Coca-Cola, because now my top executives, they can go work for Pepsi tomorrow. They don't have to take a year off, 120 days off, 2 years off. They can start their own beverage company. I'd have to think long and hard. Think about scientists. Coca was talking to me about this pre-show, and he's so right. The people who are developing these new sports drinks, they're using the money from a company. That's the purpose of a non-compete, that when you're investing in R&D with your employees in a product, you want that product to be yours. There's non-compete clauses in the deals that we do in media. We cannot do a sports. I'm going to raise my hand here, Coca, and I'm going to open the kimono. I can't do another sports business podcast for another, or baseball podcast for another platform other than Metalark Media. Guess what? Not anymore. Are you listening? Of course, that's not exactly true, because the current non-competes will stay in place for now. And by the time my deal with Metalark is up, which is soon, that ends. But the next deal, every podcaster who does a deal with any platform, the non-compete clauses are gone. And do I think that I'm now worth more because of that? I don't, because I get paid for giving my loyalty to a company. And I promise I won't compete with you. I will do everything for you. I will develop this power drink. I will develop this financial derivative. I will develop this scouting technology, and it will be to your benefit. And I'm not allowed to take it anywhere else. It's over now. The FTC is making news today. I don't know if it's going to get attention on other shows. I think it should, but it may not. I don't think people quite understand the significance of it, but they will. We've learned a couple things today when you're a worker about rights to match, about non-compete clauses, about when you're pretending you're going to get more than you're actually getting. That's it on the FTC, Coca. I want to end today's show with a quick update on the Utah hockey team. And the reason I want to spend a couple minutes on it is because Ryan Smith is a very out there owner. He went on the Pat McAfee show, and he is confident that the NHL team is going to be a success. He's all excited about it. He's got 27,000 season ticket deposits. And he had a great quote. And his quote was about starting a team. We're not going to be perfect. There's no way we can be perfect, but we're ready to go. When you are starting a franchise or when you become a new owner, I want to compliment Ryan Smith. How many new owners buy a team the way Smith bought the Diamondbacks and moved them to Utah? How many new owners, Derek, come in and say, forget what they did. It all starts now. We had to dig ourselves out of the biggest hole, which would explain our lack of performance. But we know how to do it, and we're going to do it. Believe me. Ryan Smith is telling people in Utah, hey, listen, I'm new at this. I'm a new owner. We have to put an entire structure in place. We have to do an entire front office. We're going to try to figure it out as best we can. But please, manage your expectations. Now, I don't know whether he meant manage your expectations on the ice, whether he meant manage it if we don't return your call and you want to be a corporate sponsor. I'm not exactly sure which expectations need or want to be managed. But what I am sure about is that Ryan Smith is on the right track. And I'm super excited to watch him build his franchise and root for him, lest you think that I'm always against owners or always against players. There are people who actually understand that it's nothing personal.